Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
This week we chat with our pop culture expert Eve Thomas about dream vacations. Eve has compiled a list of several great vacation spots that are off the beaten path. Now they may be a little bit pricey, but definitely worth the expense because of their location, charm, and beauty. We then speak with our smart shopper Solmaz McDaddy about back to school shopping. She has some great tips about how to get your kids and yourself ready for another year of living and learning. We also celebrate an artist who's had the amazing feat of having one of their songs back on the charts 21 years after its original release.
Capture your need for sound.
Probably for as long as you can remember, you've been thinking about your dream vacation, some amazing locale somewhere in the world that you have read and heard about that you just want to splurge on and go and see. Well, to give us some wonderful destinations to add to your dream vacation list, as well as reasonable alternatives, is Associate Editor of SpaFax Luxury Brands, as well as Kelly Alexander Show pop culture expert, Eve Thomas. Eve, thanks for joining us on the show this week.
Hi, Kelly. No problem.
So, Eve, you know, you work in the luxury business. Can you tell us, I guess, what you would define as a dream vacation?
Well, they're not hard to come by if you work in my industry, but I think for the regular person who doesn't travel to 20-plus hotels a year, it's the kind of thing that you... the kind of thing that gets you through the week, the kind of thing that gets you through the month or even the year, the destination that just sort of builds in your mind. And once you get there, lives up to your fantasy.
Now, if we kick things off, because you have sort of provided me with a list of things to go over, and I know that one is called Eden Rock. So where is this sort of dream vacation spot? And I guess, you know, what did they have that puts it on this A list?
Right. Well, like all... the properties I chose for this, it's not cookie cutter at all. That's the number one thing. It's the best at what it does in the area where it is, and you're not going to find this exact place anywhere else in the world. So Eden Rock is in St. Barts, which people may already know about from, I think a few reality shows have gone there, a lot of fashion shoots shoot there. It's in the Caribbean, and it's kind of, you know, the playground for the rich and famous. And I think a lot of people think, okay, regulars can't go there, but it's just a stunning volcanic island. It's beautiful. It's got the most amazing beaches, and yes, they allow regular people in. I guess what makes it so special, one of the things is technically it's a French collectivity. So, you know, different islands have sort of different backgrounds, and in this case, you actually have a lot of Parisian and French people working there, and they also import the most amazing food, because like a lot of the islands around there, they can't actually grow their own food. So you might go somewhere else and get kind of burgers and fries and things like that. But here you get, you know, artisanal yogurts and foie gras and things like that. The hotel itself is actually the first on the island. It was built in the 1950s by this explorer and aviator, and it was a hideaway for Hollywood stars. And then it was bought about a decade ago by this British businessman, David Matthews, and his wife, and they bought it as a home and then sort of turned it into a hotel over time. And now it's just this amazing, stunning, really just like one of the very, very few tropical places I've been where the reality actually outdoes the photos.
And can you give us an idea, I guess, about what we're looking at price-wise? I mean, I know because we were going wild here, so I'm assuming this is several thousand dollars.
Well, like anywhere, there's sort of the most, let's say the top of the line is a three, you know, the splurge is a 3-4 floor villa called the Rockstar Villa or Villa Nina that has its own butler, a screening room, a Mini Cooper you can drive around, private jacuzzi, giant kitchens. One of them has its own recording studio where you can actually record an album on John Lennon's old soundboard. So that one is in, let's say, five figures if you want to stay there.
Wow, okay.
For a few days. And then, of course, they have, well, in this case, the cheaper option would be going in off what they call low season, which is North American summer, which is kind of a joke because they just have beautiful weather the entire time. So it's still an amazing trip. And then the high season would be around in St. Bart's around Christmas and New Year's is when the Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich brings in his giant yacht and everyone has a giant yacht party. And that is when you need a book.
Is that when that guy, like, didn't he just turn 60 or something like a year or so ago and he had like the Black Eyed Peas perform? I think that's the dude.
Probably. He's got a very big personality and the biggest yacht in the world, last time I checked.
Really?
But, so again, the kind of more affordable option is actually what you can do if you can't get a deal. But
five.
Like all the places I'll mention, it's actually really good value for its money if you actually consider, you know, spending one amount and sort of being disappointed or spending double that and having it really live up in every way to what you dreamed of. One thing that you can do is all planes pretty much fly into St. Martin Airport, so the island of St. Martin. So then from there, people go to different Caribbean islands by boat or by twin prop plane. So some people will stay in St. Martin, somewhere more affordable, and then go either just for a meal or for the day, or they'll just spend, you know, they'll splurge on one night and then maybe spend the rest of their vacation somewhere else.
Okay, I think that's great. And I think it's good to know that, you know, I know we're talking about dream vacations and really going all out there, but it's nice to know that there are options that you can actually do this. It's not that you need to be, you know, Donald Trump.
Right. You know, I think a lot of people are very intimidated. And I mean, it is true. The cost is prohibitive for some people, but better to save up for this for, you know, a year than somewhere else for half a year. That might not be as fulfilling. And really, you know, once you get there, I've got to say it's just a very sort of, it's not fawning. It's very a subtle, really good sense of luxury where they treat everyone really well and there's no snobbery and everyone who's there is friendly because, you know, there's no judging. It's not like a nice restaurant in New York where you kind of feel people's eyes on you. It's just really very welcoming.
Now, if we move on, this sounds kind of interesting to me. The Shangri-La Hotel Paris.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So these are the two places I've been most recently, so they're very fresh in my mind. Well, if you don't know Shangri-La, it's an Asian line or brand of luxury hotels, and this is their first property in France, and it kind of comes on a wave of different properties and brands that are moving into Paris because, in part, they're catering to sort of a new brand, a new breed of Chinese travelers. So while it caters to everyone, it's really interesting because they've actually got a ton of Chinese art from their CEO around, and they have a Chinese restaurant, a Michelin-starred Chinese restaurant, which is just, if you told people that maybe 10 years ago, I think they would have been quite surprised that that exists in Paris. In the 11th arrondissement, which is actually a really big arrondissement, but it doesn't have a ton of, it's got quite a few museums, but you won't find a ton of hotels there. It's across the Seine from the Eiffel Tower, which is where most people go and then go back to their hotel and then don't really explore the area. It's near a ton of embassies, a ton of sort of old money. And the hotel itself is in a mansion that was built by Napoleon's grandnephew. And it took 4 years to build and then, you know, at the turn of the last century, and then it took 4 years to renovate, and it just opened last year, I believe. So it's really an amazing place. It's almost like walking into the Louvre and being allowed to sleep over there. It's like in a museum. And in fact, they used a lot of people who are certified by museums to restore all these amazing murals and things like that. It's pretty stunning.
Is there a time of year that people should go? Again, like an off season where the price is going to be better?
It's, you know, so far I spoke to people there and they were expecting for, you know, the reputation to sort of build, but they said they've been booked solid for so long since they opened. The thing with Paris is it is the number one travel destination in the world. So there aren't a lot of gaps. There aren't a lot of times, but
that's really interesting
again,
to know. I had no idea that Paris was the number one. I had not a clue. So that's good to know.
Yeah. It's, and they don't seem to be losing ground at all.
Is it really true?
I mean, Paris is really, you know, it's this destination that doesn't really matter what culture you grew up in, everyone sort of sees the Eiffel Tower and just thinks, oh, romance, oh, dream destination. In fact, this is a great place for, I would say, a honeymoon, which I think people are willing to spend a little more than they normally would.
Okay.
And in this case, too, it is worth the splurge. They have rooms that are on the side with the Eiffel Tower, and you can literally be taking a bath and just look out your window and it's right there unobstructed, which is so incredibly rare in that city.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. And then is there, I guess, dining in that, you know, structure itself? Like, you don't have to go flying all around, or are you expected to go and find your own restaurants and stuff?
Oh, no, they have two restaurants. And the one I mentioned before is the Chinese restaurant. And they actually just got a Michelin star, which is amazing for a Cantonese restaurant. And I had the Peking duck there. And I have to say, I had it in Beijing, China, and I had it there, and it was just as good. And there are other restaurants called La Bay, and they just got two Michelin stars, which is pretty incredible. I think it's one of two or three restaurants in the city that have two Michelin stars. And in that case, I would say, if you can't splurge on the hotel, you should really try to stay, you know, do Airbnb, do a cheap, you know, a cheaper hotel, and then just eat, pack a lunch every day, and then just have one meal there, and it will be worth it. And, you know, you can go to the lounge, you could go to the beautiful, beautiful bar, and then you can sort of experience the hotel just for the evening.
Now, a question for you, I guess, with this place you said being relatively new, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a place where the, you know, Parisian elite will go for dinner? Like, is it a place where people are trying to get in?
For dinner reservations, definitely you want to make them far in advance. It seems to be, yeah, I did see a lot of people going sort of for meetings, especially to the bar, but it seemed to be very international. Middle East, as I mentioned, Chinese, just basically the world's elite, not just the Parisian elite.
Okay. Now, if we keep with this Asian theme, I guess, what's the schoolhouse in Beijing?
Okay. The schoolhouse is actually sort of a collective. Two couples, and both have an American partner and a Chinese partner, and they started renovating these old buildings that are at the base of the Great Wall. They're literally, you know, you would drive past them, this tiny little village at the base of the Great Wall, you'd drive past them to go visit the Great Wall, which, if you've ever been to China, is kind of, you know, it's kind of a tourist trap. I think there's a subway restaurant there. There's a ton of tourist trinket stalls, things like that. But most people would just go through this little village and not pay attention. It's a lot of farmers. A lot of them don't have plumbing, that sort of thing. So these people renovated. There's an old schoolhouse, hence the name. They renovated into a restaurant. And then there's an old, I think it's a tile factory, and they renovated that into a hotel called the Brickyard. And there's also a spa there. And it's so incredible because, again, I think everyone pretty much knows now about the luxury boom in China, and designer brands are opening up shops there. And they're really, it's very sort of, you know, nouveau riche. And they want to, you can go to Beijing now or to Shanghai or even some of the other cities, and you can go to any hotel chain that exists, any five-star dining establishment you want. But in this case, it's really like the subtle, subtle luxury. You wouldn't even know these places are there when you drive by. They're all sort of carved into the existing buildings. And they also have, on top of the hotel rooms, they have different houses that they've renovated in this very sort of, again, simple, beautiful style that is actually quite Japanese, and you can rent those out too. You can rent out the entire house.
And do you, when you are there, like, is it hard to get to this place, or is it, you know, is it very commuter sort of friendly?
Well, I mean, obviously here the big expense is getting to China, depending where you're listening from. To get out to the actual, you could even do it, you could rent a car, or you could get out, you can get a driver for quite cheap to bring you to the Great Wall, because it's probably like a 5-minute drive from, you know, the sort of tourist parking lot. So in that case, it's quite easy. But as I mentioned, it's also very easy to drive past.
Okay. And is this a place where, again, you're going maybe just with your significant other, or would you want to have, like, your two kids with you?
It's definitely kid friendly. I think they have sort of some activities, and there's sort of pick your own orchards, and you can go bicycling and things like that. It's definitely for the outdoor enthusiasts. I would go as a couple. I would go with my family, but it's, you know, they have to like to hike a little bit. They have to, there's not, you know, you have to sort of make your own fun in many ways.
Okay. And how much would this sort of run?
It's actually very reasonable. It's really as much as you would pay for to sort of rent a cottage in North America, in up in cottage country. It's just, like I said, getting out to China, getting the visa, the slightly more complicated elements. I think it's about $200 a night for the cheapest room at the Brickyard. Again, it's very, very simple. You go into the room. I think they don't even have, you know, it's just a big window. They don't really have art in there, but from your room, floor to ceiling, you see the Great Wall, and that's what you wake up with, and that's how you go to bed. It's really quite amazing.
Wow, that's awesome. Joining us on the show this week is our pop culture expert, Eve Thomas. Make sure to check out her amazing blog called thegreatergoods.org. Now, Eve, what about this place in Scotland that I cannot even pronounce?
Yeah, I know. I can't pronounce anything there, so forgive me, too. It's called Monocle Moor, and it's in this one, too, is a little bit of a drive, unless you splurge on a float plane. So you can actually take a float plane from one of the closer airports, and it straddles two lakes, or locks, as they call them, and you can actually just fly right in if you want to be fancy. Otherwise, it's quite a long drive, but a beautiful drive. So, yeah, it's in the Trossachs, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, too, in a national park, and it's really just pure, beautiful, sort of cliched Scotland. It's, you know, you've got these beautiful mountains, you've got mist every morning. It's stunning. It's really, I have to say, actually, every single one of these places, too, if you're a photographer, they're all photo ops in the most amazing way. If you know who Rob Roy is, the sort of Scottish hero, anti-hero, he had a farm across the lake from where the hotel is. And supposedly he has a gravestone down the road at this tiny little, like, magical church. It's just stunning.
Is this a seasonal place, Eve, because of the fact that I'm assuming there is, you know, inclement weather in Scotland occasionally?
Right, yeah. When I visited, well, here's the thing. It was raining every day. And it was incredibly misty and foggy. But if you sort of do as the Scots do, you just sort of walk it off. You kind of get used to it, and it's actually, I think it makes it more magical. We went on a little a safari in a jeep through the hills, and we were looking for stags, and it was just the most amazing thing. The guy who brought us, you know, he just stopped. It was, you know, so foggy. He gets out his telescope, points up, and then, you know, miles away in the mountains, we see a stag and we see some does behind it. And it's just, it's a very sort of butch place as well. You know, you can go hunting, you can go fishing, you can go hiking, you can go clay pigeon shooting. It's roughing it, but in the loveliest way, because once you actually get to the hotel, which is a converted farmhouse, and it looks like a farmhouse sort of on the outside, and then you get inside, and these rooms are just so gorgeous. It's really like rustic luxury. It's kind of, you'll have an antique stove, and then next to it, you'll have an Eames chair or a Herman Miller lamp. It's really like a very nice mix.
Sounds like a royal family type vacation.
Yes, yes. I believe Prince William has been there, actually.
Oh, really?
And Ewan McGregor, I believe. I think there's quite a few celebrities, but in a very low-key way. And actually, the co-owner, Tom Lewis, I believe, him and his siblings run the place. And he's the chef, and he's also gaining a little bit of celebrity. He does just the most amazing things, I have to say. This place, too, food is also a theme, because this place, people will drive hours just to eat there, and it's not super rustic. It's quite avant-garde, but he's using ingredients that are all around you. You can literally sit in the dining room and look out the window, and you can spot, you know, most of the ingredients on the menu. The fish from the lakes, there's deer from the hills, there's wild pheasant, there's chanterelles, there's their own free range, well, their own sheep grazing around the property as well. It's just, I actually, when I ate there, a pig ran across the field, and I thought it was a big deal, but I mentioned it to the chef, and he just sort of shrugged. He's like, oh, well, it shouldn't be doing that, but, you know, they were fine with it.
And I guess a question, how far is this out of, like, where are you landing to then drive, I guess? Like, I know you said it's a long drive.
Well, the way that I took, I think, was not quite direct. But you can get there from, you can get there from Glasgow within a few hours,
okay.
I believe. It would be the ideal place to, I know some people like to sort of go on driving vacations. It would be the ideal place to go to if you're sort of driving across Scotland.
Okay.
You know, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and then go up there the same way people do across England.
Well, I'm really glad you brought up Scotland because I would have never thought that could be a dream vacation. I guess I always constantly think that people are thinking about sun and sand, and I just think it's great that you've brought this option because it does sound really cool. And it actually reminds me, as you were explaining this, and forgive me, but I will proudly say that I watched that movie The Queen like several times, and so it reminds me of that scene where she's like in the mountains looking at the stag, so it's all good.
Right. I actually, that's literally what I thought of when I was there. I was certainly not that close, but this sort of the Brits and the Scots do have this really great concept of rustic luxury where you're out there and you're in the mud and you're wearing like a sort of an oilskin jacket, but you love it. You know, you're doing a lot of hiking and then you're just hungry and then you come in, you sit by the fire and they give you some soup and some whiskey and it's fabulous.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, something that actually surprised me on the list that you sort of gave me in advance here was, I guess I never expected to see Las Vegas, even though I guess I should because you always hear about all the luxury that goes on down there.
I never expected to ever mention Las Vegas on a list like this. And actually, I went there for the first time last fall and I had no idea what to expect. And I certainly did see a lot of the sort of stereotypical stuff, you know, kind of the animatronic people, the light shows, things like that. But I stayed at the Encore at Wynn Las Vegas, which is sort of a newer property by Steve Wynn, who he's this billionaire who's kind of credited with the Renaissance of Las Vegas and making it about more than just gambling, you know, about not just shopping and luxury, but also really good food and a sort of an adult playground, but in a nice way, not just the way that people know it for. So the Encore has some really unique things about it. For example, there's no children allowed on the gaming floor. So you don't see maybe, I was surprised how many families I saw in Vegas, but you won't really see them at this particular location. Also, there's daylight everywhere, which is really amazing because that has been a no-no for so long in Vegas. In fact, all the sort of design details were really, I think there's chandeliers everywhere. There's a ton of red. All the design was just done kind of, you know, independently just because this is what they wanted it to look like. And they just sort of broke a lot of the rules, a lot of the old rules in Vegas. And the main thing, as I mentioned, food is a pretty big deal for me, and the food there was just amazing at both Encore and at the Wynn, which is the sister property. They're both attached, and it's really, you know, I kind of had that stereotype of all-you-can-eat buffets and sort of boring steakhouses and shrimp cocktails and that sort of thing, but I swear I had the freshest seafood of my life in the middle of the Nevada desert. Because
wow.
I
That's crazy. That's really great to know because I think so many, and I know people don't mean to be like this, but I know I am too. Like even when I see, let's say, shots of Moscow or whatever, like I'm like, oh, they have that type of car. Like, you know, like I'm somewhat shocked to not see everyone riding around in a Hugo. And I know that sounds really bad, but when you see movies and that's all you ever see, like I think that's what a lot of people have in our mind, that Vegas is a certain way, you know, Paris is a certain way, Scotland's a certain way. So I think it's great that you're maybe dispelling some of these myths.
Right. And I think some people want it to be a certain way, but for people who go there a lot or for people who are going there for the first time but want something different, they now have these amazing options because people realize, you know, it's saturated with those sort of cliches. Actually, something else that's really interesting about this property and about Steve Wynn is he recently became a vegan. So you've got these amazing restaurants like Bartolotta was just incredible. That's the one with the seafood, just incredible. But they've all got vegan menus now, which is, again, something you would never expect in Las Vegas. But he made sure that they weren't just, you know, oh, this recipe minus the meat, the kind of things that most vegans are used to getting. But he made all his chefs really put in the effort and put good vegan food on. Even at the steakhouses, they've got to have vegan options that are real options and not just a side dish.
And I had a question for you, I guess, in, you know, in the way that if people are really trying to plan, you know, their dream vacation and they're socking away the money, like you said, for a year or 18 months to really sort of have a good time, what would be your main tip regardless of where they're going to go?
Well, I guess one, realize what kind of place you're going to. Like for this Vegas place, you can find a deal. It's going to happen. Though, you know, you can find a really good deal, in fact. Though they want you to visit. They want you to splurge on other things. I would figure out if it's the destination that's really important to you or the property at the destination as well. Like, you know, you will have probably just an incredible time at the Shangri-La Hotel Paris. But as I mentioned, you could stay somewhere else and then just go there for part of your trip. So, you know, figure out how much time you think you'll actually spend in your room or how important the hotel part is to you. You know, I guess that's it, just deciding what your priorities are. Do you want to go on sort of a foodie adventure? Do you want to sort of feel really spoiled in a hotel and maybe go to their spa? Or do you really, you know, that's very second. Do you want to spend as little time as possible in your hotel room and spend it all going to shows or exploring the neighborhood? I think you need to know that. And if you're traveling with someone, you sort of need to be on the same page.
Now, before I let you go, this is something that's been sort of rumbling around in my head, and I'm not sure if you can answer this or not. And I know I'm sort of throwing you a bit of a curveball, but, you know, 2012 has been quite the, I guess, the, you know, amazing phoenix for London, you know, London Olympics, London 2012. And I heard something recently where it was this guy talking in an interview about, and I guess he's with like the London Tourism Board or whatever. And he was basically saying that everyone has this preconceived notion of what London, you know, was going to be like because of the buildup to the Olympics and then the Olympics and post-Olympics. And he was actually saying that a lot of people are not there now because of all these misconceptions. So do you think, you know, post-Olympics, you know, London will be a good place for people to visit because maybe there will be deals? Because from what this guy's saying, they weren't really making as much money as they thought they would during the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that might be true for all Olympics, but it could be true that a kind of so many people were worried that it would be packed that it ended up not being as packed as they thought it would be. I think Yogi Berra has a quote like that, you know, it's nobody goes there anymore, it's too busy. But I have heard that I do know a few actually very luxury hotels there, like the Savoy has a deal right now because they're basically going from, you know, full occupancy during the Olympics to a bit of a drop-off. So there are going to be places that have deals because they want to keep that momentum going. I imagine the city itself, too, is going to be quite incredible after, I don't know how long the cleanup will take, but after that, you know, we're still waiting to see what the facilities are going to be turned into. I was there actually shortly before the Olympics, and it was just really incredible to see how many new green spaces there were and how many new sort of activities and things like that. So I'm sure a lot of that will continue on long after the Olympics are done.
And can you answer this? Because I'm not sure if you've been to Athens recently or not, but I was shocked to know that since their Olympics in 2004, a bunch of the structures that they had built and put in place are just not being used. And it looks like, you know, an empty parking lot, which I'm shocked.
Wow. I have never been there, actually. Oh. But being from Montreal with our Olympic stadium,
yeah.
I cannot criticize them because we're still trying to figure out what to do with that.
Yes, that's nice. A nice hole. Well, Eve, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate this.
No problem. And I really hope I help people because I know even if you don't have a lot of money to spend, you want to spend it the best you can. So pick the vacation that counts.
Awesome. That is Eve Thomas, our pop culture expert. Make sure to check out her blog, thegreatergoods.org.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
It's hard to believe, but summer is quickly marching to an end, and this means getting ready for back to school and all the things that come along with it. To give us an idea how to get ready for learning our ABCs is our smart shopper, Solmaz McDaddy of mysweetdeals.ca. Solmaz, thanks again for joining us on the show this week.
Thank you.
So, Maz, I think a lot of people are in the throes of getting themselves and their kids ready for back to school and, you know, all the things that sort of come along with the autumn season. First of all, is this really the time to be doing the back to school shopping, or should some of it or all of it have been done further in advance?
Well, that's a good question, Kelly. You know, I always like to keep an eye out throughout the year for deals that might come along. So I think this is definitely your back-to-school shopping season. That's when you get the shopping list from the teachers. So there are certain things on that list you wouldn't know to buy in advance. However, if you know what your kids need, the basics, whether it be clothing or pencils, notebooks, notepads, well, then you might be able to see a deal 6 months from now and think, okay, I've got two kids. I know they'll be using this for sure, and it's 50% off. Why not stock up? And that's something that a lot of people have difficulty doing because they figure it's not my budget. I didn't budget it. It's for in 6 months from now. However, if you're able to change your consumer pattern behavior, that's how I consume things, and I think that's why I'm able to get large discounts and get a better bang for my buck. So you figure, okay, I'll spend $10, $15, $20, whatever it is, but I'm going to save that in 6 months from now and won't have to spend double that amount.
So people really need to think about, yeah, I don't want to spend this now, but if I spend this now, I'm not going to spend, you know, 100% of it, like you said, 6 months down the line.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what should parents be on the lookout for maybe when it comes to kids' clothes? Because I know kids are constantly growing and all that kind of stuff, but I feel like there should be some sort of plan of action.
Well, definitely. And, you know, we'll be roaming the streets in August and seeing all this fall fashion when it's really hot outside, depending on where you live. So that's full price items. And I always suggest to wait it out. They might be going back to school at the end of August, but it doesn't necessarily mean they need all of their fall fashions for that first day back to school. And if you're able to wait it out a bit, not only will you get those clothing for cheaper prices, but your kids might come home and see that their friends are wearing certain fashions, and so they want to get the trendy items. Had you shopped for all their clothing beforehand, they'd be begging you to go back to the store and you wouldn't have the budget to necessarily do it.
Now, do you sort of think that, you know, that sort of falls along the line as well for shoes and all that kind of stuff? Like, does all of that sort of fall into the same category, like clothes, shoes, backpacks, like all that kind of stuff?
Well, all depending if they need, if they need their shoes to go to school, depending, you might be going to private school, so you need the specific black shoe to go. In that case, you might not have a choice. And as you mentioned, they're growing. So if you buy the shoes 6 months ahead of time, will they fit? That's always a tricky situation with kids. But if you're able to save, you know, half the time, then buying the full price shoes might not be so bad.
And, you know, I know that you mentioned, I think this is very key, there are certain things you cannot buy in advance because the teacher is going to have that list for you, you know, on week one of the school year. But for bags and binders and all that kind of stuff, I guess that is pretty generic and stuff that people could get, like you said, when it's 50% off.
Right. And, you know, just keeping an eye out, going through the flyers, you'll see some places might have them discounted. They might have the same item listed at a cheaper price. So if you're trying to save money, that's definitely time well spent to shop around.
And what's your opinion? Because this is something I've always wanted to know. You know, when you're sort of, you know, the summer has just started, like it's like July 7th, and then all of a sudden you start seeing like back to school specials coming in. Are those really specials, or are they just trying to entice you to sort of be on the lookout for getting things done, but you're really not saving that much?
You'd have to know the product. I mean, there could be good specials, like they could just be trying to entice you, as you mentioned. So you just really have to kind of know what the price goes for that specific item, generally speaking, because it could be a deal like it could not be. But sometimes they will put the big red special, and it's really a regular price. And so, you know, that's important to know.
So you really need to be on top of your game.
Yes.
Okay. Joining us on the show this week is our smart shopper, Solmaz McDaddy of MySweetDeals.ca. Solmaz, what's your opinion on getting bigger ticket items like laptops and computers at this time of the year? For example, you know, I always see, because I think you and I are both Apple subscribers or Apple product people. And I know, for example, whenever there is any sort of holiday or festivity, you might want to call it like Mother's Day, they're always like, you know, get this for your Mother's Day. And we all know that Apple doesn't really give deals per se, but I know that, for example, they do, I think, for students, you actually can get an Apple computer cheaper, like at a discounted price. is this a time when you should be doing it, or do you think it's all around the year there's deals to be had?
I think that at this time of year, it's definitely a better time of year to purchase your laptop or computer. I definitely am an Apple fan, and around, you know, back to school, they'll always give something to entice you to buy a new computer. So a couple of years, it was a free iPod. Another year was $100 towards, I believe it was, your iTunes account. So that's really interesting. That's not only over and above your student discount do you get this deal. So that's definitely interesting. And if it's not an Apple computer, different company brand name, whether it be you go to Future Shop or Best Buy, they'll usually have pretty good deals for back to school. I also noticed around Christmas time is another good time. So that's usually the two times of year that I try and buy my laptops whenever I have to, or if friends are asking for advice.
Now, I know that this is not only the time of year for kids to be going back to school, but a lot of adults are, you know, coming off vacation. So what should they be on the lookout for at this time of year regarding clothes and maybe, you know, work accessories like briefcases? Like, is this the time of the year when you would be getting discounts as well, or should you be looking at other off-season times?
Yeah, definitely off-season times. You know, work clothing, again, goes back to regular priced items. The sales start again around end of September, so October, beginning of October, you get good deals. So if you need some clothing right now, that's great. You might be able to get, you know, a special weekend deal. Some stores will have you come in and say, okay, this weekend only 15% off everything. And that's always nice if you need it and you see something you like. But it's not the time of year where you'll be saving the most of your money.
Okay. And is this also the time of year to be looking towards buying end of season summer items for next year? Because I'm assuming that there's a bunch of stores, whether it's swimsuits or, you know, shorts or whatever, that they're trying to get rid of and out of the store.
Yes, definitely. This is the time of year to be getting end of season summer items. We're nearing towards the end of it, so if you want things for next year, you better go out and buy them right now. But definitely, their clearance discounts, this is the time to buy. And if you're going to buy classic pieces, basic pieces that you know you like, why not go out and buy them even though you're going to wear them come next May? Or maybe you're going to go down south in 6 months. Why not do that? So I think it's definitely a very smart move to be shopping at this time of year.
And what do you say about online deals? Because I know that you're the queen of finding these online deals. So is this a time when, I don't know, like Groupon and all this stuff are going to have crazy things out there for people to get either coming out of summer or heading into fall?
If you're talking about group shopping websites, those deals are great all year long. So I wouldn't say that they're better at this time of year. If not, other stores, whether it's online or at the physical store, the deals kind of coincide. So they might have extra deals for shopping online. Sometimes they'll do that. And if you are members of your favorite store's databases, you'll get emails with promo codes and saying, shop online and get an extra 10% off. That sometimes happens. But again, with the clearance merchandise at this time of year, it's still a good way to go with the online shopping.
And, you know, is this a time of year, like I know we talked about end of season summer sale items, like get them now, blah, blah. Is this a time to be looking to be purchasing Christmas items and beyond? Like, should people be starting to have their eyes open?
I always have my eyes open, definitely. You know, some of my friends think I'm crazy because 6 months before their birthdays, I'll start consulting them saying, okay, what should we get them? And they're like, you're thinking about it already? Just because I figure, what if we see the perfect item? We know what we want to get this person, but, you know, it's on sale in 2 weeks and then in 6 months sometime, from the time it's full price again. So I think it's definitely smart to be on the lookout. It doesn't mean to actually get up, go out and shop for these things for Christmas. Definitely, that's not what I suggest you do, unless you want to do it, that's great. But I suggest just keeping an eye out open. You know, so you're out shopping for whatever else, and then you think, this is what I want to buy my husband for Christmas. I've got this idea. If you happen to find it in September, at a really good discount, why not buy it? Unless it's something where you think it might not fit for size, clothing, then you probably won't be able to return it come December. But anything else, if you know that's what you want, keep an eye out open.
And do you have any thoughts or, I guess, tips on or to tell people when to expect prices to start going up for Christmas? do we sort of get through, you know, American Thanksgiving or Canadian Thanksgiving and then the prices start to go up, or is it even earlier than that?
To go up, you mean before Christmas?
Yeah, like where they start to jack the prices for certain things. Like, should people sort of have a time of year in mind, like October 15th, you know, if I'm expecting some deals, maybe I should look at that because now into November, you know, the prices might be full price.
Right. Not that I know of. I think that, you know, there are constantly different deals, you know, the patterns aren't necessarily identical from year to year. Definitely, you know, our Canadian Thanksgiving is American Columbus Day, so that's always a great weekend to shop both in Canada and the U.S. And then you have, of course, Black Friday, which is the American Thanksgiving, which then you get really great deals. But other than that, in terms of prices going back up before Christmas, I think you can always get a deal as long as you keep your eyes open, keen on a deal or whatever like that. So not okay. necessarily.
Fantastic. And so, Maz, before I let you go, is there any sort of final tip that you would like the listeners to have in mind when it comes to, you know, back to school and autumn shopping?
You know, I think we've covered it really well. It's keep your eyes open for any deals that might come along, whether it's for now, you need it for tomorrow, or in a few months' time, make sure to keep your eyes open.
Fantastic. Well, Solmaz, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That's our smart shopper, Solmaz McDaddy of My Sweet Deals. Make sure to check her out, mysweetdeals.ca.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
So you and I haven't talked about music in a while, but something has come to my attention, and I really wanted to talk to you about it. It's about artist Crystal Waters. Now, maybe the name doesn't jump out at you, but if you were around in the 90s, you definitely know who this artist is. She burst onto the scene in 1991 with a song called Gypsy Woman and kept going from there with songs called Making Happy, Relax, 100% Pure Love. She was all over the club scene in the 90s, and she continues to be that person today. 20 years later, she is still all over the place, performing at clubs all around the world, performing at gay pride parades. Lots of people still love to hear Crystal Waters do her thing. Now, why I wanted to talk about Crystal Waters is the fact that her song, Gypsy Woman, which I told you was released in 1991, so it's over 20 years old, continues to have a life of its own. This song has been remixed and remade several times over, and it continues to do well. For example, it is now on the dance club charts yet again. So this is 21 years later. This song has now remade it back onto the charts because another artist decided to remix it with Crystal Waters, Music Boutique. And the song is doing very well, climbing up the dance charts as we speak. And I just find it amazing that a song that was released 21 years ago is still causing damage, still making people want to dance to it. And it's funny because this song has actually, I suppose, sparked a bit of controversy when it was released. A lot of people either loved it or hated it, but you couldn't deny that it definitely was, you know, an earworm and stayed with you. And it's a song that I have always loved. I actually, to this day, have, you know, several versions in my iPod, and when I'm out working out, it often comes on. I often make sure that I'm at least listening to Gypsy Woman, you know, at least, you know, once or twice a month for sure. And so I wanted to bring this to your attention just because I think it's fantastic that Crystal Waters, you know, after all this time, 21 years, she still has a hit with Gypsy Woman. And if you are a fan of Crystal Waters like I am, you know, on her Facebook page and on her Twitter account, she will refer to this song as, you know, the lady still alive, because she talks about Gypsy Woman, the character in the song. And this song, obviously, very still much alive. And actually, just a few years ago, back in 2006, a rapper, T.I., who is a very, you know, popular rapper around the world, he actually decided to take the instrumentation of Gypsy Woman, slow it down into a hip-hop beat, and it was a very, very popular song back in 2006. And in fact, him and Crystal, because she was, you know, part of the writer on that song, won a songwriting award because it was such a popular song back in 2006. So this song continues to have all these different versions, continues to do well, and I really wanted you to take a listen to this latest version, which again is climbing up the dance charts yet again. So this is Crystal Waters and Music Boutique with the 2012 version of Gypsy Woman right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. We'll be right back. Week in the world, how about we catch you up to speed with what's been going on?
Breaking news just coming into Fox News Channel from Associated Press. The Hearst Corporation reports the legendary editor of Cosmo magazine, longtime editor Helen Gurley Brown, has died today at the age of 90. She first came onto the scene back in 1962 with her book Sex and the Single Girl. 3 years later, she took the helm of Cosmo, and for 32 years, she was the editor of that magazine. Helen Gurley Brown was no icon, said Fran Benick, the CEO of Hearst, in a statement, quoting her formula for honest and straightforward advice about relationships, career, beauty, revolutionized the magazine industry. She lived every day of her life to the fullest and will always be remembered as the quintessential Cosmo girl. She will be greatly missed. The legendary Helen Gurley Brown, dead today at 90.
Do you remember this laugh? That's Arnold Rorschach of Welcome Back, Kotter, one of the sweat hogs, four hard luck students, and the teacher who wouldn't give up on them. The ABC hit launched the career of a 22-year-old John Travolta, and of course, the lovable class clown, Rorschach.
Oh, 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 oh!
John Polillo later became a teacher himself. He died in his sleep of an apparent heart attack. He was 63.
Bring on the... Remix.
Press play, fast forward. Non-stop, we have a beaten path before us. It was all there in plain sight. Come on, people, we have all seen the signs. And we will never get back to the old school. To the old grounds, it's all about the new found. We are the newborn, the world we're all about.
We are the future, and we're here to stay.
We come a long way since that day, and we will never look back at the faded silhouette. We come a long way since.
us. Day by day, soon the change will come. Don't you know we took a big step forward? Just lead the way, and we pull the trigger, and we will never get back to the old school, to the old grounds. It's all about the newfound. We are the newborn. The world, the wall about us.
We are the future, and we're here to stay.
We come along.
With Silhouettes on the Kelly Alexander Show. I want to take a moment and thank my guests, Solmaz McDaddy and Eve Thomas, for appearing on the show this week. And I also want to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Ralph Marston. Spend each moment in genuine joy rather than in stressful combat. Also, I want to make sure you tune in next week as we chat with Dr. Stephen Whiteside about helping your kids deal with back-to-school anxiety. There are lots of steps that you can take to make things easier for your kids to adjust to their new situation, so make sure you tune in for that. Also, don't forget to check out our Twitter account, at KAlexanderShow, as well as on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. And if you have any comments or questions, as per usual, don't hesitate to drop me a line. I always appreciate it. Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an awesome week, and you and I will chat soon.